Good evening. Greetings in Jesus' name this evening. Christian character with media. I would be interested to know what goes through your mind when you think about character and media. I'm not going to interview all of you tonight and find that out, but when you think about character and then you put align media with character as we know Christian character, what is your thought? This weekend, as we look at character, we're probably going to spend a lot more time thinking about Christian character and then adding media than we are going to be talking about media and adding character. Because I believe as we, as Christians, navigate the generation in which we live, first of all, we need to be men and women of character. And as we get that straight in our mind and as we follow God and His will for our lives, then the problems and the resources that is our privilege and our responsibility to use can be aligned with that character. So tonight, the subject is tools of tomorrow. As we think about tools of tomorrow, I want to think tonight a little bit, first of all, about tools. The word tools. What comes to your mind when you think about a tool? We all know what tools are, but when it comes right down to trying to explain, if I didn't know very much English and I came to you and said, now what does this word mean? What would you tell me? How would you explain it? It seems like it has an obvious answer and yet a technical definition. Obviously, a tool can be used. It's something that we use. It could be something that we use in a useful way. It could be something that we use in a way that's destructive. It could have a lot of different definitions depending on what we consider a tool. As we think about tools, if you would come to my house and you would go out to my garage and you would open the lid of my toolbox and you would look inside and you would see wrenches maybe or whatever tools I might have in there, that would seem congruent with a toolbox to see wrenches or to see screwdrivers, right? That's what you expect to see when you open a toolbox. Well, what if you looked into that toolbox and you saw shotgun shells for the boys or whatever it might be? How would you, when you looked at that, what would determine whether you thought that was a fitting tool to be in that toolbox? As we think about that, now if you would go to my toolbox and you would open the lid and the first thing you saw was an iPad, what would run through your mind? What would you think about? Wow, you know, what's this iPad doing in a toolbox? Well, that would tell me that you don't really think that an iPad is a tool, right? Or maybe you think that it is a tool, but it's in the wrong environment and it needs to be in a different cabinet and something more fitting. As you look at that iPad in the toolbox, and you, the thoughts that go through your mind is going to determine the reality of how you think about that iPad, whether it's a fitting environment or whether it really is a tool. Maybe you'll think, wow, I can play games. Or maybe you're going to think about my work, because I use this iPad for a tool in my work, and that's what you reference in your mind. Maybe you think about Facebook. Maybe you think about some kind of video clip. Maybe you think about your photo album. You know, a lot of those thoughts are going to align with the reality that you have experienced up to that point in deciding whether this is fitting or whether it's not. You know, any of these thoughts could pop into your mind, but those thoughts are going to be consistent with your activities up to that point. We're going to talk about that some more this weekend about our reality and what really makes up that reality. I'm going to use an example tonight. I've got something I borrowed. This belongs to Lowell, by the way, so I'll give him the credit for the tool, right? Hammer. I'm not going to ask you what it is. I wouldn't want to insult your intelligence. But we all know this is a hammer. And if you saw this in my toolbox, you would say, sure, that fits in his toolbox. That's a tool. If we were going to be at your house tomorrow evening and we're going to play croquet. How many of you all play croquet? Is that an old-fashioned game? Well, pretty many. And you know, you go out in the yard and you set up the croquet game. You got to stick those wire hoops in the ground and you have a couple stakes at each end that you got to beat in. And at our place in northern Missouri, when it's dry, it's hard to get a stake in the ground unless you have a hammer. And so I come to your house, and you're quickly trying to get this game set up, and you're working on putting the stake in the ground, and it just won't go. And I jump out of the car and say, hey, how about this? I got something that you need. And you look there and you'd say, that's just what I need. And I would give you this tool, right? It would be a tool. Well, what about if you and I worked together in the workplace, and hopefully this would never happen, but we were working together and we had a disagreement. And this disagreement would fester through the day, and we weren't working this disagreement out in a peaceful way. And it continued to become more and more volatile, this disagreement between us. And finally, I reach in my desk and I pull this thing out and said, I'll fix you once and for all. Would you consider it a tool? It's still a hammer, right? What changes the reality of whether this is a tool or whether it's a device of destruction? Right away, you would be thinking about hard hat, or you would be thinking about fleeing before I did something bad with this hammer. Hopefully I wouldn't. As you think about that, what defines really what a tool is? How would you view that hammer? Well, I think that proves that whether this hammer is a tool or whether it's a device of destruction will depend on the environment, and it'll depend on the situation. It's going to depend on our reality and what we're going to do with it, is whether it's really a tool. Suddenly, if you're facing me and I'm upset and I'm waving the hammer, tool isn't what you're thinking about. You know, technology is much the same way. As we think about environment, as we think about things that we use, whether it is a tool or whether it is a device of destruction is going to make a difference on what we're going to do with that. Technology is much more than internet and cell phones. You know, it's more than tablets and laptops. The definition of technology is a practical application of knowledge in a particular area, a manner of accomplishing a task using a technical process, methods, or knowledge. Now, if we break that down in something simple, really it's just taking knowledge and applying it in a way that's practical, and it becomes a resource. That's technology. John, could I have a cup of water? You know, as we use this knowledge, if we gain some knowledge and we use it in a practical way, it becomes technology. And that may mean it's good technology, or it might mean it's bad technology. It could be either one. But by knowledge being applied practically, it becomes technology. It's created. It creates a resource. It creates a pathway. And we use that technology because we have knowledge. And as we use that resource, our knowledge creates resources. And as we experience those resources, it builds knowledge. And then in turn, it builds more resources. That's what technology has been doing over the years. It has been evolving. Because our knowledge builds resources, and resources build knowledge. And this wheel continues to get bigger and bigger up to our generation. Think about it for a little bit. The Wright brothers. In 1903, the Wright brothers built the first airplane. They flew the first airplane. Maybe they didn't build the first one, but they flew the first airplane, the first motor-powered airplane. They had knowledge. They took this knowledge and they applied this knowledge through trial and error until they built a resource. Now, we look at that airplane and we think, what an experimental aircraft. But they took this knowledge and they built something that is technology. They flew this thing. And from that resource, knowledge continued to build down through the years till you and I fly on a jetliner anytime we want to. We don't think that much about it. We go from point A to point B in one day, many miles, because of why? Because there was knowledge that was applied. And it became a resource, and that resource was experienced and built knowledge, and now we have the airplane as we know it today. Thank you. You know, in 1968, Saturn V was a rocket that flew men to the moon. And that rocket had a computer in there that weighed 72.5 pounds. But in that 72-pound computer, there was less memory in that computer than what you would have if you owned a flip phone. You know, one of them phones that you open up. Less memory in that computer. And yet, it had easily enough memory to take men to the moon. If you have a 2-gig flash drive, you have much more memory in your pocket than that 72-pound computer had. And yet, think about that Saturn V rocket and what it did in comparison to what the Wright brothers did. See this wheel, this technology continued to roll, and it built this source of knowledge and resources continued to build until that point. And now since 1968, lots of things have been happening. Technology has created the opportunity of accomplishments at a distance. Think about it, in work. How do you think Adam and Eve planted their garden when God put them out of the garden because of sin, and then they tilled the earth? Have you ever thought about how they tilled the earth? We don't really know. But if they didn't have technology, which it would have been up to Adam and Eve to develop it, they were out there digging in the dirt with their fingernails to plant their garden. Well, you just take something simple, like a crowbar, something we use all the time without thinking about it. That's technology. Well, however long that crowbar is, if you take a 36-inch crowbar and you stick it under something heavy, where are you? You're not down there in the dirt. You're up here 36 inches away, and you just created a lot of leverage to do something greater than you could do down there in the dirt. That's technology. It has separated you 36 inches from the effectiveness of your effort, and it's given you more power than what you would have had without that crowbar. That's technology. Think about a rake or a hoe. When we use a hoe in the garden, we're not down in the dirt. We're up here. But what we're doing is down there. When we rake the yard, we're not down there with our fingers scraping leaves together. We have a rake, and we're using this piece of technology. And we're about 3 or 4 feet away. And then we've become more effective because of that technology. Well, you have a handcart, a wheelbarrow. You know, you think about rolling something heavy across the yard in a wheelbarrow. How would you like to just pick that up and carry it? Because of technology, you can put that in the tub, and it's got a round wheel on it that rolls, and the leverage has become so much less from the tub to the handles of the wheelbarrow. Now I can do more than I could without technology. Then the horse and the plow became even better. Now I can sit down and accomplish something without much effort. Well, we know that eventually forklift replaces the wheelbarrow or comes to do heavier things. More technology, more knowledge being applied into this tow motor that I can sit on, and all I got to do is go like this and push my right foot, and I can move lots and lots of weight all around. Technology. You know, the tractor replaced the horse and plow. Technology. Knowledge continued to advance until we separate ourselves further and further from our work, and we can do more and more at a distance. So distance also comes with technology and communication. You know, Adam and Eve, when they communicated, they had to communicate within close proximity of each other. They couldn't even be a quarter of a mile away unless they had a strong voice. They had to talk to each other to understand. And then later on, the written word was developed because of knowledge. And from the written word, many things have come to us. I had to think about, my mom tells me that she remembers back when she was young and serving on the mission field that they used telegram. And this was technology. And she said there was times that they would get a telegram about somebody that died in the States. And by the time they got the telegram, the funeral was already over with. Was that technology? We look back at that and say, how ancient. And yet, that was the development. And that was things that happened that led up to your generation, where now none of us have ever experienced a telegram, or at least I never did. You know, in our day, we can hardly relate to something so slow and something so cumbersome. And yet, there's a lot of things like that that has brought technology. The resources that we have been developed. They didn't just fall out of the sky. And as that resources were developed, it created knowledge. Now we have so much knowledge that has been developed that has just been given to us. We don't have to figure out how to invent an iPad to use one. We just get one and learn how to use it. That's because of knowledge and resources that have developed before your time or people beyond your existence. Telephones were made where we could communicate across the miles. And then pretty soon we could get a wireless telephone, a mobile phone, where you didn't have a cord hooked to the wall. I remember when my mom used to talk on the phone like that, and if the cord would go over and through the door in the sewing room, I knew that she was probably having a conversation she didn't want me to hear. Now your parents can just take a cordless phone and disappear somewhere else in the house. Technology. You know, now talking is almost old-fashioned. It's a staple way of communicating. It's grandpa's generation to talk on the phone. Communication has advanced to new levels. You know, Alexander Graham Bell, he patented the telephone in 1876, and the Wright brothers invented the airplane in 1903. Just a little over 100 years ago that some of these basic resources were created that has brought history up to our point in time. You know, these inventions that you deem ancient have all come in such a short period of time. But as knowledge increases, the process of technology speeds up. The wheel gets bigger, and every round it covers more ground. And so as we think about tomorrow, more is going to happen in the next 10 years than happened in the last 10 years. There's a lot more changes, like Lowell was talking about tonight. Changes, they're all over, and it's going to get worse and worse. Things are going to change more rapidly. Things are going to, more new things that even you don't understand. As progressive as you think you might be, there's going to be new things that are going to baffle your imagination, and you're going to have to figure out how does this fit in. As knowledge increases, we have a challenge of what we're going to do with that knowledge. You know, you all in your generation will have to sort out those resources that are created that come to you through your life, and you will have to decide whether this thing that comes to me is a tool or whether it's a device of destruction. Turn with me to 1 Corinthians 16. I'm going to take a verse here out of context. Apostle Paul is talking to the Corinthian church. Let's back up here. I want to look at verse 9, but let's go back here to verse 6. He says, "And it may be that I will abide, yea, and will winter with you, that you may bring me on my journey whithersoever I go. For I will not see you now by the way, but I trust to tarry a while with you, if the Lord permit. But I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost, for a great door of effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries." Now I think Apostle Paul here in verse 9 just really hammers home what we face with technology. He tells them, he's looking at Ephesus, and he said that a great door and effectual is opened unto me, and there are many adversaries. And that's exactly how it is for you today. As you face tomorrow and think about the tools of technology, tools of media that you are using today and going to use tomorrow, that it's a powerful resource that you have at your disposal. It's a great door and effectual. This means it's a powerful opportunity, and it's an opportunity, and it's very powerful, and there are many adversaries. You know, I believe that's what we need to recognize, that along with the resource, there's adversaries. There's things we need to remember as we look at these resources and try to decide, is this going to be a tool or is it going to be a device of destruction? I need to remember that with the resources comes the threat of adversaries using this against me. Adversaries here would denote the fact that there is something that is in opposition to the goal. And I believe this describes our generation. I believe it describes what you face today and what you're going to face tomorrow as you think about media technology. You know, it's a powerful opportunity, but it comes with adversaries. It comes with dangers and risks. Media technology has an influence on our lives and culture beyond a hammer. It's much more complex than a hammer or a screwdriver. You know, back in the 1800s and early 1900s, It was fading out in the early 1900s. But the Victorian era was in the 1800s, and that was that era, that culture, that when you look at old ancient photos of black and white, you see men sitting real stiff and straight. Have you ever seen pictures like that? That was the Victorian era. It was an era of highly moralistic culture, and it was straight-laced language and very straight behavior. You know, some of the defining qualities of the Victorian culture were low tolerance for crime, sexual restraint, strict social conduct, and social behavior. The Victorian era was not necessarily Christian, in that it had a lot of traits with it that were not Christian. And we're not going to go into that, but it wasn't that these people were necessarily Christian, but it was still a culture that was moderated by a lot of Christian principles. The social behavior still was moderated by something that was principled, something that was foundational, and something that as Christians we look at and we use today, maybe for a different reason. But you know, as the Victorian era came into the 1900s, there was a change that took place in this era, in this culture. It was changed. And what changed that culture was the invention of movies. Movie technology came in around the 1900s, and as these movies were developed and television came on the scene, there was a lot of information now that could move at a distance, and it permeated American pioneer homes, and a lot of homes now had access to knowledge that they didn't have before. And it gave an opportunity for people with more liberal thought patterns to be able to broadcast their thought patterns and get it into the homes of the American people. And it was the demise of the Victorian culture. You know, this technology, it lengthened the reach of a different school of thought than what was in our country. And it ended up changing the American culture. And that it created a popular culture. And pop culture has developed since the 1920s into our day today. And it consists of a lot of things that we see today with transgender attitudes and attitudes of a perspective of music and fashion and clothes, ideals that we look at now and it's just mainstream that came in at the demise of the Victorian era, and this pop culture started to roll, and this started, and the influence came from media. In spite of a lot of opposition from religious groups who tried to stop, they saw this influence coming in, this pathway of television and movies. And they tried to stop it. They said, this isn't good. We've got to put the brakes on this. But who won? Popular culture. The popular thought of the liberal entity won the fight. And now it's the norm. As we see culture today, this popular culture has developed to the point where it's gone far beyond what the American culture was in the late 1800s and early 1900s. And what started that was the access to media, movies and television and the radio. You know, instead of families doing things together, they would sit around the living room and watch the television. And in the early 1900s, it started out maybe something that wasn't so bad, but it didn't take very long, and television content was debauchery. And now instead of families doing things together and building relationships, they were sitting around the living room and soaking in all of this influence that changed the culture. Now we see the country that we live in and the culture that's out there today. You know, it affects political character. It affects retailers as they build consumer products and put them out on the market. Their thought patterns is pop culture. And they want you to like this stuff and buy this stuff. And as people like it and start buying it, they are starting to train their minds for something that they want. So they build things that these consumers want, and this thing continues to grow. This knowledge and this influence continues to grow and to catapult through our generation. You know, it's sad to say, but this culture has influenced the church as well. You know, this pop culture is known for its disrespect of authority, individualism. And I don't want anybody to tell me what is right and wrong. I'll decide for myself what is right and wrong. You know, our media tools are not as simple as a hammer. They are complex. They're confusing. And for the most part, they are constructed by people that are a part of this pop culture. They are made by people that don't have the mindset that you have. You know, as Christians, we are people who have different goals. We have different ideas about what we're going to do with our life, how we're going to use these resources that are available to us on the shelf. And we need to remember that when we view something, a device of some kind, that as we look at that device, let's remember that it was created probably by somebody that's a part of a culture that you don't want to belong to. And so you need to be aware when you go to use these tools that you're going to use as a tool, that it actually is a tool. You know, as we try to make good choices through a landscape of technology that was designed by liberal thought, by pop culture, how are we going to do this? Sometimes it looks overwhelming to me as we see all of this stuff, and it's not just that we don't know what to do with this, but so much is coming, like Lowell talked about the change. We can hardly get used to one thing and something else is coming. It's just bombarding us with all of this stuff, and we have to sort through it. And we almost feel like maybe we should just leave this culture and go somewhere else. Live in the bamboo shack somewhere a long ways away from anything that resembles a touchscreen, right? Let's turn to John chapter 17. This is Jesus praying for His disciples and for us. Let's start reading here at verse 14. John chapter 17, verse 14. I have given them Thy word. This is Jesus praying. And the world hath hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that Thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that Thou shouldest keep them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them through Thy truth. Thy word is truth. As Thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also might be sanctified through the truth. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word. I love this chapter here of Jesus expressing His thoughts in prayer to God, as we can see the character of Jesus here. He cares a lot for His disciples. He loves His disciples. And yet He needs to leave His disciples soon, and the Holy Spirit is going to come and live in their hearts. And Jesus here, I believe, is giving us a concept of the power that's available to us. He said, "You are not of the world, even as I am not of the world." And then he prayed to God. He said, "And don't take them out of the world, just keep them from evil." And then later on, he prays for us here in verse 20. Neither pray I for these alone, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word. That's us. Jesus was praying for you in your generation. And He's made a way for you to live within the realms of this culture and still stay pure from the evils that are created by the culture that we live in. That should be an encouragement to us as we think about that. Jesus, way back before our time, was praying for us in our media culture. And He was telling God that we don't need to take them out of the world, but let's keep them from evil. You know, the concept of tools and devices of destruction has been around for a long time. It didn't start in our generation. With the advances of technology, the influence has become more and more invasive. But as we think about technology, there has been good and bad for years and years, long before you and I were living here on this earth. So as we think about the influence of media, the influence of media on my life, and how is it going to affect me, the influence of popular culture through media that reaches out to many places in our country and around the world, and it's affecting hearts and lives, how is it going to affect you? Where should our focus be as we make personal choices in these devices of media, whether it's going to be a tool or whether it's going to be a device of destruction? You know, think about it for a minute. Who is responsible for whether this is a tool or a device of destruction? I don't know who invented the hammer. Bless his heart, because it's been a tremendous tool. I don't know who it was. But is it his problem to make sure that this is a tool in our life? Maybe it's the people that manufacture the hammer. This is companion. Maybe it's Stanley or S-Wing. Is it their problem to make sure that a tool is a hammer? Maybe it's the hardware store's problem. After all, they're marketing it. And when we walk into the hardware store, they should interview us and ask us 150 questions of what we're going to do with this, and do we know how to use it, and is it going to be a tool? Is it their problem? Lowell owns this hammer, and I'm holding it, so it's his problem if I use it in some way to destruct, right? No, I don't think he'll take responsibility for it. We have one man that agrees. It's my problem when I pick up this hammer and grab the handle, it's my problem whether it's a tool or a device of destruction, correct?
Amen.
That's right. And it's no different with devices of media. When we choose some type of device and we take that within our possession, and as soon as we lay our hand on that, we become responsible of how, the outcome of that device and the influence it has on our lives. We have choices to make when we go and use devices in our day. Whether that's going to be a device of destruction in my life, in someone else's life, or whether it's going to be a constructive tool that builds a pathway of where I want to go. There's no way that we're going to avoid choices in our life. Do I need a hammer? That's the first choice I need to make. When I think about buying something or purchasing a device, do I need it? You know, it's hard to think about that. It's easy. It makes sense to us tonight. But when I think about some new device that I want, it's hard to think about the need, isn't it? Because I'm overwhelmed with this thought that I really want this thing. I really would like to have it. And to be able to stand there and evaluate whether I really need it takes character. To really stare ourselves in the face and say, do I need this? Just because a hammer is used widely by our culture or by other people or our neighbor doesn't necessarily decide that I should have a hammer. If I buy a hammer when I don't need one, it likely will become a liability to me. If you would come over to my house and you knew that my job, I worked at Walmart and I was a door greeter. I'm the one that says hi to you when you come in the door, make you feel good. So you buy a lot of things. That was my job. And when I was off work, I did something else that didn't pertain at all to a hammer. And I would tell you, now I'd like to buy a hammer. And you say, well, why do you want to buy a hammer? Well, because my neighbor over here, he bought one and it's really neat. And my friends over here, they have a couple of them. And I just think it would be really nice to have a hammer. What would you tell me to do? You would tell me, steer clear of the hammer. You don't need it, right? If I go and purchase this hammer and I don't need it, and I bring it home, it's going to lay around. I've got a 3-year-old daughter and I have a lot of glass instruments in my house. And this thing is most likely going to cause a lot of destruction around my house, and I'm not going to need it. And so, therefore, it becomes a liability in my life. When we buy things that we really don't need, we're making a choice to add something to our life that is a liability. We're responsible for that. And it's already a liability when we need it. And when we don't need it, it becomes an extra liability because we're not using it for good, and it's laying there just waiting to do something destructive. You know, media usage and devices should be determined by the need. Whether we need this or whether we don't. It doesn't matter what neighbor Joe has, or my friend over here, or my relatives, or my family. If they have XYZ, that doesn't mean I need XYZ. I need to decide what is my need, and then I need to meet the need. You know, it's a powerful tool. But if we get something we don't need, it's going to become a liability. You know, this principle applies not only to devices, but also to software and apps and things like that that we choose to download on our devices. As I use something for good, I have to make a lot of choices in the wear and tear of that device. When I'm using it for a tool, I need to think about, why do I need this particular software? Or why do I really need this app? What is it going to do for me before I download it? It's not good enough that my friend 123 has this app. That's not good enough. As soon as we choose to download that app on our device, instantly we are responsible for how we use that. And that is going to be an application that is going to be a tool, or it's going to be a device of destruction. Because even if we consider some neutral influence in our life, if we spend a lot of time using that when it's not accomplishing something, we become responsible for our time, and it's still a liability. You know, just like Apostle Paul said, with these powerful opportunities of media, there comes adversaries with them. And even when we have good uses for a device or application, there is still risk. And when we have these things and without a need, it's even more risk. There's potential danger in the things that we own. You know, these things that we have, even when we're using them as a tool, they are demanding. The same way that we can be effective at a distance also means that these things are going to influence us at a distance. And so even though I have a smartphone or some kind of other device, and maybe I lay it down over here away from me, and I'm doing a job here, in my subconscious mind, that thing still has a requirement of me. I still have a subconscious note in that thing is over there, and I'm pretty sure I need to go pay it some attention. I need to flip through and check my messages or whatever it might be. It's taking some concentration away from us because that device and I are sharing my life. So even though we think maybe the things that we have are not necessarily a building tool, it's just neutral, it still has an influence on your day, your everyday use of how you use your life and how you concentrate on good things. That has a handle on your mind. These things are, they are somewhat addictive, very addictive if we allow it, and even if we try not to allow it, they're kind of addictive, even when we try not to allow it. Because we're attracted to this interface that's on our devices and this social contact. And we're going to talk about that more as the weekend goes along. And so we need to remember that. There's going to be an automatic pull to that device. We don't have to generate a relationship with that thing to like it. We're going to automatically form a relationship with it because it's attractive to us. Remember, it was invented by somebody in pop culture that wanted it to look nice. They wanted it to appeal to you. It was created that way. So as we think about these things and the demanding part of these devices, there is a demand on us when we have them. It's a demanding element in our life. They demand attention in a culture that already is busy. Every spare minute is called for most of the time, and yet this thing is in my pocket calling for my attention. It's demanding. It's demanding when it sits over here on the counter and it glows, wanting us to come over and finger it and use it and check it and pet it and whatever else. And I use those terms just because. But I have these things too, and I know how it is. They demand money when there's a lot of other needs around that need our money. Now remember, these things have potential for good. It's a powerful tool, but we must moderate this thing in our life. When we allow media or any technology to influence us to make poor choices that jeopardize our relationship with God, if we allow this thing to somehow get between us and what we know is right, even if it's only exposure to something that we think is neutral, if it takes our focus away from God, what happens when something else takes our attention away from God? It becomes an idol to us. Through the demand and the attention we give it, it can become an idol, or we can keep it in perspective of a tool, and it's a choice we have to make. God holds us accountable for choices that we're going to make with media and devices. We can't blame the technology for the evil. There's a lot of evil content and technology. There's a lot of evil things on media. There's also a lot of good things. But when we take that device up, the choices we make with that will determine whether it's going to be evil or whether it's going to be good. Technology in general is not moral and it's not immoral. You know, if something is immoral, it's evil, it's bad, it's sin. If something is moral, it means it's good. And it aligns with right. It aligns with truth. And when you take a device and you lay it here and it's sitting here in the off mode, it is neither moral or immoral. It's amoral. It's neutral. And when we pick that up and start to use it, then we determine whether this is going to be a tool or a device of destruction. So we need to evaluate the choices we make as we use these tools. You know, if you were going to make a long and dangerous journey through rough terrain, you would want to evaluate that trip. You would want to look at the dynamics of that trip and decide, now what do I need to do? What do I need to buy for footwear and for clothes and for a backpack and for food so I can make it from here to the end of that dangerous journey? And you know, it's no different for us today. We're headed for a destination. And as we are traveling this pathway to a destination, we want to arrive. And we're going to use media. We need to choose carefully that media that's going to help us arrive and not to distract us or somehow kill us on this pathway and take us away from the destination where we want to arrive. You will choose what you will use on this pathway. You know, in church decisions, we've been talking about making personal decisions as individuals, as Christians, and what I'm going to use to make something a tool. And there's also the aspect of church decisions on media technology. Choosing the tools of tomorrow will be done on a personal level, and it will be also done in conjunction with your brotherhood. That's very necessary. As you think about you and your brotherhood working together, there needs to be decisions made for tools on individually and collectively. You know, as we do that, as we make choices, and as you as young people face these things in your generation along with your brotherhood, media technology has a way of exposing the weaknesses in our church, weaknesses in relationships, because there's often a different perspective when we look at media technology. Depending on what age you are, you have a different perspective of that. And really none of us can help that totally. But I challenge you to allow this debate and this decision that you have to make individually and with your church, that it's done with the right attitude. And remember, there will be different perspectives. You know, oftentimes there's an element of fear when we deal with this collectively. Older people, they fear change, just like Lowell talked about. They fear change. They don't really like new things. They're pretty set in their ways, you know, and they don't really like anything to rock the boat too much. They would rather talk about things that happened 20 years ago than think about what might happen 20 years from now. Because they've seen enough things in life that they understand the dynamics of the future, and it's much more comfortable to reflect than it is to predict. On the other hand, as younger ones, in the younger generation, you have this element of fear probably of being left behind by your generation. As these resources come to us, we're excited about life. We want to use these things. And we see our generation moving forward with this media technology, and we have this fear of being left behind. What if my church keeps me from using something and I get left behind by my generation? You know, as you, as young people, respect the perspective of the older ones in your church. Cultivate relationships with the older ones in your church because they need your perspective. They need your help. As you work together as a congregation, as a brotherhood, the older ones need you to help come to the right place of application when you make decisions about technology, about media. You need them. You need their perspective, and they need yours. And so instead of polarizing the situation by each being somewhat fearful, and we're focusing on our own fears, and so it kind of polarizes the situation, and we're either scared to talk about it, or we can't really talk about it in a relational way and come to a principled decision, it can polarize us to where either we can compromise and come out with a decision that doesn't really satisfy the need for anybody, or else we can just move forward in kind of a stagnant mode when we really should be producing action. You know, in our generation of media, there needs to be action. We need to be moving forward with decisions on what we're going to do individually and collectively. And so don't allow fear to restrict you from building relationships with the older ones in your church so that you can work together. They need your perspective and you need theirs. You know, just for instance, say you had some people in your church that they just really don't want the internet and they're scared of the whole thing and they don't know much about it. And you use the internet and you want to have these things and you understand the potential for bad, but you also see some potential for good. And so they want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and you would like to entertain some of these ideas and use them. And so you can end up stalemating because you can't come together in a relationship of trust and working together. And that, and the decision, whatever decision you make, if you have a relationship that is polarized, you're not going to come to a good decision. You're going to compromise somehow and maybe end up not really satisfying the need, not doing the job for you, and not doing the job for them. So be careful as you work with your church that you blend and that you work on building relationships of trust, because the church needs you and it needs your perspective. Remember, we're on a journey that has a destination. And this media that we use is not an end in itself, but it needs to be a means to an end. It needs to be a tool that we're going to use for a purpose. You know, there's a lot of developers out there that are developing media, and they use a couple principles that they know will steer the crowd. And three of those things is fast, cheap, and easy. They know that if they can develop media technology that's fast, that's cheap, and it's easy to use, they're going to be able to take you where they want you to go. Why do you think that apps are becoming more and more popular? Because it's easier, right? Instead of getting on a browser and going to a destination, you just get their app. As soon as you get on the browser, this retailer would say, "Get my app. Here, use this app." Right? You know what I'm talking about? And so you know that if you get this app, it's going to be faster, and it's going to be cheaper, and it's going to be free, and it's going to be easier. So now when I want to go to Cabela's, it's going to be fast, cheap, and easy. And they know that. And they are developing these things because they want to take you to a destination. They want to take you because you are the market. You think you're getting something for free and they're using you. You are the market. And they want you to go where they want to take you, but you need to go somewhere else. And so let's remember that in our journey to a destination, as we use media as a tool, let's be careful that we don't get steered down this pathway and just fall right into the groove that a developer might want us to go. But there's some other principles, I think, that we need to use as we think about, where is this going to take me? Is it really what I need? And is it going to do for me what I think it's going to do? How is it going to improve my life? How is it going to get me from here to where I want to go? Is it going to improve the quality of my Christian life? Is it going to improve the quality of my life and those around me? Or am I going to go down a pathway that's already paved by some developer? As we adapt and change applications to meet the principle, there's three things that I think we need to do. First of all, we need to remember the principle. And we'll talk about that some more. Remember the principle when you make decisions. Number two, respond with an application. Remember the principle and then take that principle and respond to that with some kind of application. Don't sit there and do nothing, but respond with an application that is fitting to the principle. And then number three, refresh your knowledge. It's very important that you take in the knowledge you need to make principled decisions. You're not going to get where you want to go by making decisions with media and not understanding the dynamics of what you're doing. I believe knowledge is important. There's a lot of knowledge out there we don't need, but there's an element of knowledge that we really do need to make good decisions that are applicable to the principle. Technology we choose should be a means to an end. You know, in our Mennonite history, change has has usually meant liberal. A lot of times in history, if you look back in our Mennonite history, changes were deemed liberal. Because a lot of people that changed out of the ordinary usually were taking a path that was taking them in a more liberal direction. Liberal is not really the right word to use. More progressive. Further away from principles of the Bible. And so, up until our generation, change has not been well accepted. But I think that as you journey through your life, choosing tools of media, that you are going to have to change your application fairly often to stay current. Just because you can make an application to a principal today, 2 years from now, you're probably going to have to change that application a little bit to make it work and keep the principal. Just like 2 years ago, you know, apps on phones or apps on portable devices really weren't an issue. The issue then were browsers, and we needed to figure out how to protect this browser. How do I use this browser in a responsible way? But you know, today there's more danger in an app than there is in a browser, because there's more tools to moderate that browser than there is apps. Things have changed. And what the things that we did 2 years ago, now we need to take another look at it. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with that, but that is the nature of this elephant that we're facing, and that we're going to have to continue to use the principle in a way that fits our culture. We must remember the principle, and then we need to apply it. So as we think about applying principle in media technology, as as young people, look at tools of tomorrow, you need to be able to have the principle in your mind, because there's a purpose that media needs to fill in your life. You have a purpose, and this media that you purchase and that you use in your life also must accomplish a purpose. And we're going to go on with that tomorrow morning as we look at the message of power of purpose. We want to look at what is your purpose and how does this, the tools that we have, how does that affect the purpose? May the Lord bless.